This is Press Watch, a weekly counter-propaganda and left opinion program here on your people-supported free radio station, KBOO Portland. I'm Teresa Mitchell. Join me for a brief peek behind the video veil of monopoly media manipulation and an examination of the news you're not supposed to know. Happy New Decade. Happy New Year. Mother Jones writes, a slim majority of registered voters support the House of Representatives' vote to impeach Donald Trump. So I thought I'd start off with some good news on today's show. And this from CommonDreams.org. On Tuesday, just one day before equity-centric legislation legalizing sales and adult use of recreational marijuana took effect in Illinois, the Democratic governor, J.B. Pritzker, granted pardons to more than 11,000 individuals with low-level cannabis convictions. Pritzker, who signed the bill in June, announced the pardons during an event at the Trinity United Church of Christ on Chicago's South Side, saying, quote, tomorrow, Illinois, I mean today, will become the 11th state to legalize and regulate adult-use cannabis, but our state is today doing something that sets us apart. Illinois is putting equity first, clearing thousands of convictions, and giving individuals and their families a new lease on life, end quote. The governor explained that, quoting again, these 11,017 misdemeanor convictions represent individuals who have carried around with them a stain on their records for possessing less than 30 grams of cannabis, a stain that has very often prevented them from obtaining housing or jobs or benefits, end quote. And Pritzker highlighted on Twitter that the pardons represented just the first wave. Under the state's new law, hundreds of thousands of people are eligible to have their cannabis-related convictions and arrests cleared from the public record. So speaking for myself, I think that needs to be the case nationwide, and I think this sort of thing is a good step towards stopping and reversing the damage of whiteness. And if that last comment causes you any confusion, please look up the continual and intentional disproportionate harm caused by the drug war, since it was introduced by Richard M. Nixon. Turning to other news this morning, in Australia, angry residents have been berating the Prime Minister, Morrison, as they evacuate. Tens of thousands of people are being evacuated. In New South Wales, and there's 4,000 people getting ready to evacuate in Victoria. Morrison was approached as he visited Cobargo, according to BBC. They said, some of the quotes are, how come we only had four trucks to defend our town? Because our town doesn't have a lot of money, but we have hearts of gold, Prime Minister. That's one woman calling out, heckling the Prime Minister as he had the poor grace to show up after promoting coal burning, even as global warming is causing horrific fires in New South Wales. And people have been forced onto the beach, as you may have heard, as you may have read, and have even been hiding out in boats on lakes, just trying not to perish as all of their belongings, pets, livestock, etc., go up in flames. And commenting on that before we go to another topic, I want to say that I support immediate gas rationing. I think that it would be a good gesture and help people prepare for the fact that we are in a climate emergency and that we all need to mobilize to shut down corporate-caused global warming. Gas rationing has been done as recently as the 1970s in the United States, and it can certainly be done again. Someone like me would get a ration card that would reflect the fact that I'm retired, disabled, I only need to get around and get my groceries, so I wouldn't be rationed very much gas at all, which would be just fine, and someone who lived in a rural area needed their pickup truck to haul everything from feed to sundries would get as much gasoline as they need. But the free flow would end, and that would kick a huge dent in corporate profits, that and taking away their free subsidies and their offshore profit stashing and all of the things that our corporate masters do, of course. But it might be that I think gas rationing could be a foot in the door. What do you think? The number to call, 503-231-8187. Speaking of oil, Iraqi security forces have regained control of the area around the U.S. Embassy in Baghdad After the compound was rocked by a second day of mass protests on Wednesday, this is according to Radio Havana, Cuba. Earlier in the day, security personnel fired tear gas and rubber bullets at hundreds of protesters, some of whom were seen trying to climb the building's walls. Witnesses said the protesters were hurling rocks and trying to set fire to walls and security booths at the embassy's main entrance. It was the second day of mass demonstrations outside the building in Baghdad's heavily fortified green zone in response to U.S. airstrikes on an Iranian-backed militia group on Sunday. And I want to say, even Radio Havana is going with the Iranian-backed militia group line. The fact is, they're not very well backed by Iran. They can certainly get some arms from Iran, but it's not the same as if Iran had put those troops in there, or that they were acting solely on behest of Iran. They are Iraqis. But more on that in a moment. By Wednesday evening, the protesters had cleared away from the embassy compound's entrance. Radio Havana, Cuba quotes a spokesman for the main protest group, Kataib Hezbollah, which had been targeted by U.S. airstrikes, saying, quote, "We have issued the order for everyone to withdraw because America should have received our message," end quote. The protest broke out after the U.S. carried out airstrikes on five facilities in Iraq and Syria, which it said were linked to the Iranian-backed group, killing dozens of people. And here is more. Thanks to listener Jack and to the Moon of Alabama website, on Friday, a volley of some 30 107-millimeter Katyusha rockets hit the K-1 base, which houses Iraqi and U.S. troops near Kirkuk, Iraq. One U.S. mercenary died, two Iraqi and four U.S. soldiers were wounded. Instead of finding the real culprits, ISIS remnants, disgruntled locals, Kurds who wanted to regain control over Kirkuk, the U.S. decided that Kataib Hezbollah was the group guilty of the attack. Kataib Hezbollah is a mostly Shia group with some relations to Iran. It is part of the Popular Mobilization Units, or the PMU, which were founded and trained by Iran to stop and defeat the Islamic State when it occupied nearly a third of Iraq and Syria. Kataib Hezbollah is like all PMU units, now under command and control of the Iraqi Ministry of Defense. To take revenge for the death of one of its mercenaries, the U.S. Air Force attacked five camps where Kataib Hezbollah and the other Iraqi forces were stationed. In response, the U.S. has been saying, in response to repeated Kataib Hezbollah attacks on Iraqi bases that host Operation Inherent Resolve, that's OIR, changed from OIL, Operation Iraqi Liberation, coalition forces, U.S. forces have conducted precision defensive strikes against five KH facilities in Iraq and Syria that will degrade KH's ability to conduct future attacks against OIR coalition forces. Sounds neat and Clinton, doesn't it? Precision strikes, the same as your surgeon, who of course throws firecrackers into your abdomen when it is necessary to remove your appendix. The five targets, according to the U.S., include three KH, that's Kataib Hezbollah, locations in Iraq and two in Syria. These locations included weapon storage facilities and command and control locations that KH uses to plan and execute attacks on OIR coalition forces. All of the KH positions that were hit were in the western Anbar Desert, etc. That's the official story, and the fact that the U.S. public will automatically conflate Hezbollah with Lebanese Hezbollah is part of the game here. Returning to the Moon of Alabama site, a commenter points out 32 killed and 45 wounded is the count of U.S. violent aggression in Iraq security forces. Brigades 45 and 46 last night on a military position established a counterattack and raid ISIS remnants at Al-Qa'im, the borders between Iraq and Syria. The dead include Abu Ali Madiniya, the commander of the 1st Battalion of the 45th Brigade. The strikes were in total disregard of Iraqi sovereignty and against forces under the direct command of the Iraqi state. Now that's the important phrase, and that's what needs to be remembered about what just went down in Iraq. The U.S. airstrikes were in total disregard of Iraqi sovereignty and against forces under direct command of the U.S.-supported Iraqi state. So of course people are rioting. Of course. In a statement, Abdul-Mahdi said Defense Secretary Mark Esper had called him about a half hour before the U.S. strikes to tell him of U.S. intentions to hit bases of the militia suspected of being behind Friday's rocket attack. Abdul-Mahdi said in the statement he asked Esper to call off U.S. retaliation plans. The statement said Iraqi President Barham Saleh also received advance notice from a U.S. diplomat and also asked unsuccessfully for the Americans to call it off. Don't do it. The strikes were designed to kill those who still fight ISIS in its most virulent hideouts. Now I want to depart from what's written here and say that this is actually all of a piece, this sort of divisive action. I haven't forgotten the so-called mysterious commandos who attacked years ago now, who attacked Shia shrines in Iraq dressed as Sunni and attacked Sunni shrines dressed as Shia in order to help balkanize and divide Iraq so that the oil could be extracted from little broken up states that didn't have the resources, the political will, the capital to put together the armor and artillery that is necessary to actually take on the Green Zone. And I want to point out that the protests, the riot, if you like, at the Green Zone was essentially nonviolent because the people confronting the occupation compound, laughingly called the embassy, knew that they would need a tremendous amount of artillery, air support, and armor to attack that gigantic fortified base. And so their gesture had to remain that, just a gesture. And to find out what's going on, corporate media is so pervasive that I was pointing out even Radio Havana reports some of the nonsense. You have to turn to websites, some of which I find personally rather distasteful, especially as a transgender woman. I turn to the soccer website, who... Right, just to clarify, Kataib, Hezbollah has nothing to do with Hezbollah in Lebanon. The word Hezbollah or Hezbollah simply means Party of God, and Kataib Hezbollah simply means Brigades of the Party of God. Yes, both groups have similar names, and they are both Shia. Kataib Hezbollah probably aims at becoming an Iraqi version of Hezbollah. And while they even have a similar flag, Kataib Hezbollah is neither an offshoot nor creation of Hezbollah. Kataib Hezbollah was created as a direct response to the U.S. invasion of Iraq, whereas Hezbollah in Lebanon was a blowback from the Israeli invasion of Lebanon. So again, turning to Radio Havana, Cuba, Iran, and Russia have denounced attempts by Western states, the United States in particular, at increasing tensions in the Middle East region. Thousands of miles away from its own borders, this is a quote, the United States is causing bloodshed and destruction against the people of Iraq and Syria in the name of defending itself, end quote. That's Iran's Foreign Minister Mohammad Javad Zarif during a meeting Monday with his Russian counterpart in Moscow. And Zarif cited the latest airstrikes by U.S. forces against the positions of the popular mobilization units in western Iraq on Friday as an instance of Washington's effort aimed at escalating tensions in the region. Speaking at the same meeting, Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov said, quote, we see some of our Western colleagues artificially trying to inflame the situation, end quote. And speaking for myself, that appears to be what's going on. And as I was saying, it's part of the decades-long now effort to balkanize Iraq and the Middle East. Returning to Radio Havana, Cuba, Washington's latest military aggression in Iraq killed at least 25 people and left another 51 injured, drawing widespread condemnations from groups and officials both inside Iraq and across the region. Tehran had called the attacks a clear example of terrorism. Meanwhile, Kremlin spokesperson Dmitry Peskov said the U.S. had not informed Russia about the strikes. So compare this to U.S. press coverage. Quoting NPR, U.S. officials have said that for months, Iraqi militias backed by Iran have been firing rockets at Iraqi military bases where some U.S. troops and American contractors are also stationed. And speaking for myself, notice that they say contractors. Last Friday, a rocket attack killed a U.S. contractor in northern Iraq. The U.S. responded with airstrikes on five compounds in Syria and Iraq belonging to a group it blames for the rocket attack. The Iranian-backed militia called Kataib Hezbollah, meaning Hezbollah Brigades. The militia says at least 25 of its fighters died, end quote. So note that despite having vastly greater access to world reporting than some commentator on your community radio station, NPR does not challenge the U.S. position nor even disambiguate the term Hezbollah. From the New York Times, they write, U.S. officials said on Sunday that airstrikes in Iraq and Syria against an Iran-backed militia, there's that phrase again, were successful, but warned that additional actions may still be taken in the region to defend U.S. interests. And again, speaking for myself, when you see Iran-backed militia group in this reporting, remember that this is actually an Iraq-backed militia group fighting ISIS that was initially formed by Iran, and which now operates under the U.S.-supported Iraqi government, and that's why everything is, so to speak, blowing up. Returning to New York Times coverage, the U.S. military carried out the strikes on Sunday against the Qatib Hezbollah militia group in response to the killing of a U.S. civilian contractor in a rocket attack on an Iraqi military base. Speaking for myself again, when you hear civilian contractor, of course, they're talking about mercenaries, and talking about thousands of mercenaries. We're talking about a massive armed presence in Iraq, of course, also in Afghanistan. It's part of how the how U.S. imperialism is hidden from you so that you won't know anything about it, won't act on it politically. This is to keep you in the dark. U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo told reporters after briefing with Trump, quote, we will not stand for the Islamic Republic of Iran to take actions that put American men and women in jeopardy, end quote. So, again, this simplistic and false narrative is simply not questions, and I invite you to remember that it was the New York Times' Judith Miller who helped whip up American popular support for the aggression against Iraq, collaborating with the Pentagon's narrative that Saddam Hussein had something to do with 9/11 and was somehow hiding poison gas bombs or even nuclear weaponry, and that average Americans were in great danger from that distant and relatively impoverished nation. This is something that happened. This is something that was cooking as I personally decided to leave Texas and to come to Portland. And I moved my... For a while, I was doing press watch both on KAZI Austin and on KBOO. And I remember I wasn't able to mobilize people in August of 1990 against the upcoming war because no one wanted to believe that it was actually going to happen. And so I put on a suit trying to look, this is before long before I transitioned, and trying to look respectable, and I got a sign, and as far as I know, I was the first person to protest the Iraq War in Austin. So the U.S. press was collaborating with the Pentagon's narrative that Saddam Hussein was somehow hiding poison gas. And here's a quote from New York Magazine article about Judith Miller's New York Times reporting. Quote, for the next 2 years, she supplied the paper with a string of grim exclusives. There was The Defector, who described Saddam Hussein's recent renovation of storage facilities for nuclear, chemical, and biological weapons. There was her report that a Russian virologist might have handed the regime a particularly virulent strain of smallpox. To protect themselves against VX and sarin, she further reported, the Iraqis had greatly increased the import of an antidote to these agents, and most memorably, she co-wrote a piece in which administration officials suggested that Iraq had attempted to import aluminum tubes for nuclear weapons. Vice President Dick Cheney trumpeted the story on Meet the Press, closing the circle. Of course, each of the stories contained important caveats, but together they painted a horrifying picture, end quote. And we now know that the horrifying picture, which was successful and much repeated and speculated on, including here in the Portland Corporate and National Petroleum Radio Press, was entirely BS, and that doesn't stand for Boy Scout. So my question is whether we are going to, again, accept the sort of stenography as reporting, which led to general acceptance of the Iraq wars with all their horrors, and are we being primed for war with Iran again? I looked at the Wikipedia page for the initial invasion in 1990 by Bush the Elder administration and found myself silently correcting just about every sentence of the opening summary. It's been interesting living long enough to see this sort of propaganda get turned into ironclad truth in the minds of younger people. for whom the Iraq wars are glorious victories of democracy versus evil dictatorship rather than a set of unbelievably sordid aggressions that have killed a million people and turned the once proud people into a decimated rabble. Don't think I'm looking at you, youth of America, because this wasn't your idea. But for you, there is no Al-Amriya shelter massacre, no turkey shoot massacre, no vanishing tanks at the Kuwaiti border, no made-up baby snatchings from the Kuwaiti incubators, no mass deaths from the sanctions, no Judith Miller, no repeated genocide at Fallujah. That's for us crusties, because the truth has been hidden from you. Though not here, and not to the youth of KBOO, but to the nation. So the actions of the Iraqi Shia militia supporters fainting at the vast and impenetrable walls of the American Baghdad occupation compound, laughingly called an embassy, are a mystery, an indication of the perplexing complexities of a distant and unknown people. And I'm not blaming America's youth for this. I'm blaming today's corporate-owned, corporate-kissing, imperial pseudo-journalism. Comments and questions, 503-231-8187. I was asking you, do you support gas rationing? And I think that it's long past time for that. We've got to have gas rationing. 503-231-8187. Now, turning to Dan Handelman's work on Portland Cop Watch, he wrote on the last day of the old decade, addressing Mr. Pyle and Chief Resch with a little fanfare, the Portland Police released their second and final required set of police review board summaries on or about December 23rd. Portland Cop Watch has analyzed the police review board report and once again found troubling behavior by officers, unusual discipline decisions by the former chief, and extremely lenient oversight by board members. The former chief, by the way, has gone to Philadelphia. But returning to this text, especially in deadly force incidents, the one good piece of news, this is the first PRB report, perhaps ever, that did not include an officer involved in a case of driving under the influence. However, there are incidents of racial bias, a detective demoted rather than fired for two cases involving misuse of vehicles, and six cases involving deadly force, including one supposedly banned chokehold, and a fatal crash during a chase not treated as a death in custody. In a rare turn of events, the board recommended firing Officer Alfonso Valadez in the car crash case, that it was for lying, not deadly force, and he resigned before being terminated. And there's more to that, and I may get back to it, including treating an officer who was bitten by a police dog as if he had been shot. But as I say, we shall see if there's time for that, and I want to go to the first caller. The number to call, 503-231-8187. And you're on the air. Hi, Sean.
Good morning, Teresa. I appreciate a lot of your comments this morning. It's bringing back a flood of memories. One of them was the Exxon Valdez, which someone will correct me, but I think that was like early 89 or late 88, something like that. And so there was like conversation in the air about the need to get off of fossil fuels as quickly as possible. And then right around the same time, there was the massacre at Tiananmen Square, and then in short order, the invasion of Panama. And like, I remember when the first President Bush was talking about getting us over the quote-unquote Vietnam syndrome.
Exxon Valdez, March 1989. Yes, go ahead.
Right, so like all that stuff was happening in such short succession, and I remember thinking, well, there were people talking about it was the peace dividend. There, like the Berlin Wall had come down.
Oh, that frightened the establishment more than anything else. The peace dividend.
Right.
They were just like, oh my God, shut up about that. What will we do? They're tearing their hair out.
Right.
We'll all be our enemy now. We need another enemy, and the enemy now is Iran, I guess.
Right, and it seems so obvious to so many people, get off fossil fuels, have a new deal for America's major cities, all of which were crumbling and, needed massive infrastructure rebuild, bring the troops home from all over the world, slash the defense budget.
Yeah, it was to be the Green New Deal before the Green New Deal, and they hated it just as much as they hate the Green
right.
New Deal.
And I think it, and
Bush,
I think it was
not Bush. I was trying to say Trump, and my mouth said Bush. Trump raised $46 million, I think, recently you know, on these fears, and just dwarfs the amount that even Bernie Sanders was able to raise.
Well, and it was like right at the beginning, you know, it was already going on, but the mass incarceration, you know, was taking place at that time, and like the Urban League and Jesse Jackson, the Rainbow Coalition, they were all talking about like, you know, come on, peace dividend, let's rebuild our cities, let's give people good union jobs to rebuild out all this infrastructure. And instead, you know, we get the invasion of Panama, like, you know, that was what, like a month or two after the fall of the Berlin Wall, we're invading Panama, like hundreds of innocent civilians were killed in that invasion. And I remember, do you remember Ellen Goodman's nephew, Gregory Levy? It was like January of 91, the bombing had just started, and he was so horrified at the start of, you know, from going from Desert Shield to Desert Storm, he publicly killed himself because he was so horrified at the start of Desert Storm. And like, you didn't have to be a genius to see that war was going to lead to something like 9/11. No one could have predicted, you know, exactly 9/11, but it was perfectly obvious to a huge chunk of our population that if we get enmeshed in that in all of that insanity over there, so, you know, something like 9/11 was going to happen. And it's just, you know, I appreciate you just talking about all that history, because it's, you know, 30 years of just a horror show, man. And it's good to hear just somebody talking about it, and I appreciate that.
Well, thanks for your comments. Number to call, 503-231-8187. And actually, we're going to be going to Fight the Empire at the bottom of the hour, so we don't have much time. But yeah, I crafted my comments thinking that I feel like the... I feel like the Ancient Mariner trying to mention this kind of stuff, trying to reframe what everything from, actually, not just the corporate media, but elementary school teachers repeating the official propaganda have convinced a new generation and more that the U.S. is just, and that the wars are fought for freedom and democracy, and so we continually have this flow of fresh meat going into the military to either be wounded, killed, embittered, forced into a permanent and shrinking clan with their fellow veterans, or to turn against it all and to become part of an even smaller and officially hated clan of veterans who are against wars. Who are some of the, by the way, I don't want to frame it in a way that you don't understand that I do admire soldiers who have the guts to turn against their inculcation very, very much indeed. They're the people that I turn to when it comes to analyzing what's going on, and that's exactly, those are the sources for some of the information that I brought out, people who are actually following what's going on in the Middle East, which is continuing our wars. And I also want to say that U.S. imperial wars are very much a part of whiteness and help to enforce the whole thing. And I was just talking about the Portland police and the information that has been released by Portland Cop Watch. But our police, of course, are derived from slave catching, and ugly word to broadcast here after hearing such lovely singing before, but this is actually the source of the aggression that we see now, and it's all of a piece, actually. It all keeps the elites in control, and that's why we need community radio. It's why you need to turn to KBOO. That's why you need to look into the podcast, the various podcast distributors, Apple, Stitcher. Find KBOO Press Watch, rate and review it, please, so other people can find it. And also, please, each one teach one about KBOO Community Radio. We need to triple our membership at the very least over the next several months. And the reason is not just the survival of KBOO, but for us to engage and fight back against the various forces that would keep us from seizing power as a people. And now I've run out of all of my time, so I want to say thank you very much for tuning in to Press Watch on KBOO Portland, going out to you 90.7 FM and via KBOO.FM to all the ships at sea.